Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the All Seas Fan Expo, Smurf here with an actor spotlight. The man, the myth, the hardest working man in TV and comedy clubs world known, Jeffrey Peterson. But not to be confused with the robot Jeffrey Peterson.
Ooh.
Jeffrey, what about this atrocity? What did you do to separate yourself from a gay robot on the Craig Ferguson Show?
You know, that damn robot almost ruined my career.
You're kidding me.
I'm dead serious. And I'll tell you something, Smurf. You're going to find this to be crazy because I found it to be crazy. When that happened, I would watch Craig Ferguson quite a bit.
Yeah.
I used to actually be a paid audience member for years in California, in L.A. I sat at least 25 times in Craig Kilborn's audience.
I loved his show.
Right?
Yeah.
And Craig Kilborn, every single time he walked out, he gave me a dirty look. Because I was a long-haired hippie.
Right.
So metalhead. So he looked at me like I was scum. But I knew the warm-up guys, the two warm-up guys. Chuck Roy, Denver's own Chuck Roy was
right.
One of them. And another guy named Chunky B. Well, the crazy thing was, when I was doing comedy and then they came out with Jeffrey Peterson, I was like, oh my God, this guy has like got my name and he's like, how weird is this? And originally, he was spelled with a J.
Right.
If you look on their Facebook page, originally it was Jeffrey Peterson with a J.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, that's my exact name. Then he changed it
with a G.
Now, there's some other similarities. Jeffrey Peterson would wear laminates. I'm a festival comedian. Mm-hmm. I wear laminates constantly. And he had a mohawk, so he was kind of edgy. So I'm like, is there some kind of connection here? Well, I would watch the show, and things I would say in my act that week, like say at the John Lovitz Club or the Comedy
right.
Store, Ferguson would regurgitate. He'd go, hey, stoners, here's a new one for you. And I'm like, what the hell?
So you're getting swiped because you're like a huge I wasn't kidding. You are on the comedy tour.
Yep.
You're doing the Laugh Factory. You're on the circuit.
Yes. Yeah. I'm one of the players in the game. And the crazy thing was, I thought, okay, this is just too much of a coincidence.
Yeah.
And then somebody told me, you know, they're making fun of you. And I said, well, how could they? I'm not famous or anything. And he goes, that's what they think is funny, because you're so easy to make fun of. And I said, who's doing this? And he said, I talked to two of the writers. They said, it's about you.
So it was like a personal
beef. And then I dissected who it was, and it turned out it was Chunky B. And they really, truly were making fun of me. Now, Smurf, what I tried to do to capitalize on this, I contacted CBS and Craig Ferguson's production company, The Late Late Show.
Right.
And I said, I challenge Jeffrey Peterson to a sidekick off. Human versus robot.
Brilliant idea.
Because I'll tell you what.
That would have been funny.
If that bucket of bolts thinks he's funnier than me, he's fucking dead wrong.
Game on.
I'll unplug this motherfucker.
Right.
And the other thing, too, was there were some people that did dislike him.
Because the actor that...
Russell Brand ran out while Jeffrey was, like, chiming in.
Yeah.
And he knocked his head off. And he said, don't interrupt us when we're talking. We don't care about what robots think. And I was like, yes, it's happening. So I still have a little bit of a grudge against Jeffrey Peterson.
No, and I can understand it. Because, I mean, the actor that does Jeffrey Peterson, he's a stand-up comic
yep.
as well. So when, you know, the final episodes of The Late Show for Craig aired and they finally unveil who he is, I'm like, I know that fucker.
Yep.
He's not that funny. He's great at impersonations.
Yeah, and, you know, I really wanted to get to the center of it because Shadow Stevens, who was the
original voice guy.
Yeah. I contacted Shadow because I knew him, and I'm like, dude, help me get in on this. And he goes, you know, they're going to get rid of that robot anyways. And I was like, but
okay.
that was a goofy period in my life. I'm glad you recognized Jeffrey Peterson.
Yeah. I mean, because when you were first announced, because, you know, we worked together and everything, and everyone's like, well, we're bringing Jeffrey Peterson in. And I'm like, Wait, that's a robot.
Yeah.
What the fuck are
you
guys
talking
about?
You better put him
about?
Next to an outlet.
I know, exactly. Really, are they touring that thing around like Todd McFarlane's balls? I mean, what are you doing?
It's funny you say that, too, because I hit up the... I forgot the comedian's name, but I hit him up and said... Let's do a tour, Jeffrey Peterson and Jeffrey Peterson.
Yeah. That is
together again for the first time ever.
Yeah, facing off once more for the first time. It would be perfect, but that's just the way. Because you actually are a very big name behind the scenes.
You know what's funny is, I appreciate that, but you know what's funny is my moniker that I've used for 18 years is the 420 comic. So some people don't even know me as Jeffrey Peterson. And they'll just be like, "You're the 420 comic,"
and like, and it's like, yeah, an epiphany. Yeah. Like, and, I thought it was Cheech or Chong.
Right.
No.
And so, you know, what's funny is 18 years ago when I decided to go that route, and it was really because one of my biggest influences besides Cheech and Chong was the Unknown Comic.
Yeah,
and
wear the paper bag.
Yeah,
the holes cut out.
And I'm friends with Murray Langston, the Unknown Comic, and I told him I thought what a great niche to differentiate yourself from everybody. So I called myself the 420 comic. And when I started, people were like, it's going to ruin your career. Like, what it did was it niched me out to where I'll be at weed festivals and, you know, they'll know who to call.
The landscaping changed so drastically from we don't talk about cannabis to cannabis is saving legislature and fucking cities from dissolving.
Exactly.
So,
that's a big part of what I do. I'm a 32-year cannabis activist. I take that part seriously, but my activism is my comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sit there and proselytize or preach to people. I tell pot jokes that are thinkers, and then they go, "Wow,
think."
You know.
Because what else do you do when you get high besides get the munchies? You have deep analytical thoughts,
right? You know, I live in Las Vegas. They made over $600 million in cannabis sales last year,
Jesus.
And that was just to me.
So right now, I mean, how difficult? And I don't want to get political. We don't get political. Mm-hmm. But how difficult is it being a comic these days? Because you've got so many sensitive people. You've got people that are playing to different parties. And I mean, and I have a lot of comic friends. And I'm like, are you surviving? How is it? How is the landscape out there right now?
Yeah, it's pretty bleak. It really is. It's a barren wasteland. And the crazy thing is, I live in Las Vegas. I was, you know, hitting my stride. I was doing casinos like 5-7 nights a week, you know, the big name casinos. And the crazy thing is I was hitting, my demographic was tourists, so it could be anybody from any walk of life, from any, you know, part of the world, because it's Las Vegas. So you had a great audience to play off of, because they have so many different opinions to each other. Nowadays people are unified in their belief systems in some ways. So it's like a minefield for a comedian. You're going to have to tiptoe.
You can't make fun of people.
You can't make fun of people. Look, I'm an impressionist, a celebrity impressionist. I've done Ice-T for, you know, many, many years. And I've known Ice-T since 1992. You know, when I did my impression for Ice and Coco, she said, "That sounds just like you, Ice." And, you know, he didn't beat me up, so I figured, you know,
But he has a very good sense of humor.
He has a great sense of humor. He loves it. But what happens, Smurf, is I could go out on stage now and someone could go, "That's racist."
Yeah.
And I could be like, "Well, I'm actually, Ice-T doesn't think it's racist. I don't care what Ice-T thinks. It's racist." Mm-hmm. You know?
Or they need to champion to his defense. Exactly. I'm here to represent Ice-T.
You don't need to stand
Ice-T
up.
Ice-T don't need no representation,
right.
Let
Not
me tell you that. Because he would drop kick your ass and say, "No, he's got it right."
Right. And the next thing I know, they're going to be like, you know, "Don't make fun of Ozzy Osbourne. He's got mental problems, right?" You know? Like, that's what comedians do. We make fun of people. We find the silliness in somebody, and then we expand upon it. And hey, if someone wanted to make fun of me, Jeffrey Peterson, go ahead.
Yeah. And I think it's a time where laughter probably is needed most, but everyone is so sensitive because it is a minefield.
They think they need it, but they're not really sure they want to hear it.
Like, yeah.
And
he might say something that I have to be upset about.
Right.
You don't have to be upset. Just turn that off in your mind.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the whole thing is like, if you come to a comedy show with sort of an agenda in your mind, if you're like, you know, they better not talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, I was raised by lesbians in the hood. You know, now if I talk about that, so you're being insensitive to it. Like, this is my experience. This is my truth.
Well, even like when I go see like Titus, because I'm a huge Titus.
Christopher Titus.
Titus is just so, and Brad Williams. Brad, I mean, they talk about their lives in a certain perspective, and you can't get mad at Brad for making short jokes because, well, that's the way it is. And then when Titus talks about abuse and just beating the shit out of your kid,
right,
that's
and talks
his
about
life.
his upbringing, which was you know filled with domestic nonsense, you know, and Christopher Titus is a perfect example. And you know, comedy is crazy because you find yourself in positions you wouldn't expect to. 2 years into doing comedy, maybe it's 3 years doing comedy, I was still fresh into it. I'm at the Ice House in Pasadena going to watch Christopher Titus. He did 90 minutes wireless, you know, with just like a little thing. You know, he doesn't have a mic in his hand. He's just, you know, just giving you his life. And it is a harsh life. And then the host, my buddy Frazier Smith, goes, "Guys, we've got 6 minutes to kill while the checks are coming out. Hey, let's bring up my buddy Jeffrey Peterson, guys." And I had to follow Christopher Titus after he did 90 minutes.
Wow.
So the next thing I know, I hear through the crowd, "Where is he? Where's that guy? And then he comes up to me, Chris Friday, goes, "Are you him? Are you that guy?" And I said, "What guy?" He goes, "Are you the guy that thought he had the fucking balls to follow me after I did 90 minutes? And I said, "Yes, I am." He goes, "I just want to shake your hand." He goes, "You got balls, dude. You were funny." And I was like, "Wow, I thought you were going to kick my ass."
Oh, shit. And I wouldn't want to mess with Titus
no,
either.
No, no. And I'm a huge fan of the show, you know. And, you know, and Brad Williams, another great guy. I you can see me on YouTube being arrested by Brad.
See, when you told me that, I had to go look, and oh my God, it is so fucking classic.
And you can see I'm my hair is way longer. So it was, you know, it was weird. It was, being a stoner comic, I was, when I first started, it was like being a comic with a disability.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, and we have a gay comic tonight. You know?
You're working with a huge handicap.
Yeah, so it was like they mention everybody else and they go, plus there's this guy that smokes a lot of pot and tells jokes.
So what, as a comic, what do you think your biggest challenge was to overcome? I mean, is it coming up with the material? Is it standing in front of everybody? Is it remembering the lines? Because, I mean, you see these people on, like, America's Got Talent, and they try to deliver, like, 3 minutes, and they're struggling.
Yeah, and I smoke a ton of pot, so, you know? And I do pot festivals to where someone will have me do a bong in the middle of my set, and if I don't do it, then you're not the 420 comic, you puss, you know?
Like, or they take offense to that.
Like when I worked with Doug Benson last time in Vegas, he got on the mic and said, "I don't know what to say." I'm like, I'll never run out of something to say. But the crazy thing is, my biggest challenge was what most comics deal with is being comfortable enough on stage to where you turn your routine into a conversation.
Right.
And it literally takes about 10 years. And it sounds, you know, 10 years, I can do that in 3. No.
No.
No, you gotta be seasoned because you won't be respected by other comics. And the audience knows when you own that stage, they know it.
Well, and I just watched Ray Romano's stand-up, and he seems a little out of sorts. You can tell his timing's off, and he's...
Because he went away and became a TV star.
Yeah.
And see, someone like Brad Garrett owns the Brad Garrett Comedy Club. So Brad keeps, you know, he constantly gets up there, you know? So it's like a muscle. It has to be constantly exercised. If you let it go flabby, your act will go flabby.
Right.
And like, I haven't performed on a stage in 8 months now.
Ooh.
March, I was supposed to headline a casino in Vegas, the Rampart, and then that was the last gig I was supposed to have, and I have not gotten on a stage since then. Simply because I don't want to do it under the goofy conditions that they have now.
Well, and when we saw Brad, because he's the most recent comic to come through, it's just weird. Everyone's so spread out, and that's the joy of a comedy club, being all like packed together, the tiny tables, drinks.
And when the comic's tiny, too, you need binoculars.
Exactly.
Like,
thank God Brad is up close now, so I can actually see him.
You know what's great about Brad? One time I had a my pot comedy show, The Dopest Show on Earth.
Yeah.
It's my long-running show. I had that at the Ha Ha in North Hollywood. Brad was in the show, and we all went outside to get high, a whole bunch of us. And Brad's coming with us, and I'm like, you coming out to hang out with us, buddy? You don't smoke pot? And he goes, no, I don't. He goes, I just like being around people when they're high. I was like, what a goofball.
Actually, every time I've met Brad, because, you know, you stay behind, you get the pictures. He signed my picture from last time he came through town.
Yeah.
And Brad is just such a genuine guy.
Yep.
But has there been comics that you worked with that you're like, no, I cannot deal with that person?
Lots of comics, yeah.
Is there a lot of ego in comedy?
There is. There's a lot of ego, and there's a lot of people propping themselves up based on their TV credit or their, you know,
Sarah Silverman.
No, right. I won't say his name. There's a comic I know who's a headliner who uses The Sopranos as a credit. He played a dead guy. I mean, come on. So, like, you know, I was an extra on CSI Miami. I don't put that as a credit.
Yeah.
You know?
I keep asking Jeffrey Reddick to blow me up in just one of his movies. I don't want to talk. Just blow me up.
Yeah.
So I don't understand that.
There is a weird, like, you know, there are some tensions with certain comics, especially too, like, if you fall into the same categories,
right,
and stuff like that. Like, Doug Benson was a guy that I mentioned that, you know, he's, every time I've worked with him, he's just weird. He's not the kind of guy that you would think, hey, let's go smoke a joint together.
Right.
Like, you know, that's what you do, that's what I do. But, you know, then there's like Joe Rogan, who's a little harder to approach, but is also a cool guy.
Rogan I've seen and have dealt with in the past, and he's always so genuine, but he's so intense.
He's very intense, yeah. And sometimes you're not ready for that intensity, you know?
Because he is his brand. I mean, that is, without a doubt, his niche.
Yeah.
And he's so fun to just listen to just ramble.
Right. And he's very intelligent, and I realize, too, that he has been a truther, conspiracy theorist guy. I rewatched News Radio, and I was like, dude, he was slipping that stuff in. Like, this is Joe Rogan.
This is
who he really is. But one of the things I do that's unique from a lot of comics is I'm a festival comic. And early on in my career, I saw that there was a niche in the conventions, that especially cannabis conventions, like, there's no performance like
that. There's no entertainment.
Except
for watching the guy next to you.
Right. So I ended up becoming the host of these things, HempCon and Kush Expo and Kush Stock and all these things. And so because of that, I've performed with, like, my resume when it comes to performing with rappers and hip hop artists is sick. Method and Red, I've performed with, like, you know, just dozens and dozens. The guys in the Wu-Tang Clan, Afro Man. It looks like I'm a rapper because I've performed with so, you know, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Corrupt, just a million of them.
Do you have a strain named after you yet?
I do. My nephew created a strain, and it's called 420 Funny.
And a sativa?
It's an indica dominant
hybrid
because I'm an indica. I'm a stoner. I'm not trying to get high. I'm trying to get stoned. But, I set myself apart by bringing back the opening for bands thing.
Right.
And I've out here, I opened for Ozo Motley and Fishbone. I've opened for Fishbone out here. And these guys are my friends, you know what I mean? And Twiddle. I've opened for a lot of rock bands. And that is extremely hard. Like, most comics would die in that situation because an audience...
It's a rough scene.
Like Ozo Motley when I was out here at... I think it was the Ogden. They were playing and I come out to do some jokes, and one of the audience members goes... I go, hey, guys, Ozo sent me out here to tell you guys some jokes before their set. And they're like, we don't care. We want Ozo Motley. That guy started to stir up other people that were like... And I said... Hold on, let me break this down to you guys. I'm Ozo Motley's friend, okay? They're not going to be able to smoke weed unless I get up here. That's the agreement, right?
Buying some time.
I used to do that, too, when I hosted the Kush Expo. I would host the hot Kush Girl contest, and I would have to do 20 minutes before that. And the audience was like, we don't care. We want to see the girls. I'd be like, guys, consider me the world's biggest cock blocker. if those are my friends, do you want to meet these girls? Well, you got to be nice to me. I'm the like maitre d' here. So like, right, girls? And they go, yeah, yeah. And I'd be like, so don't be a dick to me. It's really, it can be tough. But I love putting myself in awkward comedy positions. I used to go to Burning Man and do comedy. And people would be like, dude, we're tripping. Like, do you think people want to hear comedy right now? I'm like, I don't know if they do, but I'm going to tell jokes.
I can see it. I mean, I never thought about it. I mean, because all the burners, not to alienate them, are weird.
They're weird. And I went for 12 years. I used to really be into it. I was a volunteer. After I introduced comedy there, they gave me my own show every day at 1 o'clock in Center Camp.
Mm-hmm.
Center Camp. And that's like literally about 400 or 500 people just sitting under there. And people would just every day go, dude, are you like telling jokes? And I'm like, yeah, that's what this is. And they'd be like, that's, wow, I don't know how I feel about that. And I'm like, I'm try to laugh.
A little awkward, I don't know.
So I'd do stuff like that, Wasteland Weekend. I stick myself out where comedy doesn't belong, and that's helped me a lot to be.
Because you're not only limited to comedy, your credentials and your accolades on the animation side mm-hmm. are freaking huge.
Yeah.
X-Men from the 90s, mm-hmm. Batman the Animated Series,
yep.
Which right there, I mean, that's pretty much every listener in my demographic is like, ugh. So now were you animator, voiceover? I know you gave Mark Hamill's mouth movement for the Joker.
Yep.
I mean,
that's what I did. It's very specific. I directed mouth movements for cartoons. And I'm an artist, but my family were animators. My aunt was a kind of a famous director. She created Baloo the Bear for the Jungle Book. And she worked on Fat Albert when I was a kid. And I would stand behind the artists when I was 8, 9 years old and just watch them draw Fat Albert. And I wanted to be a cartoonist more than anything.
The baddest buck player that ever lived.
Yeah. You got it. And I can name all the Cosby kids.
Wow.
The crazy thing is, when I was 17, they said, okay, enough standing around. Here's a pencil. And I started working on She-Ra. And that was actually animation. I was doing in-betweening.
Okay.
But in 1990, I got a job working for Stan Lee. My brother, Eric, was the lip assignment guy. That's what they call the mouth directing. And so he taught me his craft, much to his regret, because I became his number one competitor. And the crazy thing was I ended up working for Stan Lee in 1990, which was my life
goal. That's a
goal.
Huge... Dude, that's a dream for, like, every nerd out there.
I would constantly pinch myself while I went to work. And so the first show I worked on was Kid and Play. And but then, shortly after, X-Men came about, and I couldn't believe I was working on X-Men. I couldn't believe they were making an X-Men.
Mm.
You know, Wolverine slicing up people on Saturday morning, that's going to be...
So unheard of.
Yeah. It's like, wait, this is punk rock. And so I ended up having another 18-year career doing that, and I was... I loved it. I made a lot of money at it, and it kind of ran its course, because what I did specifically, now they do in computer. Yeah, now they just cut a corner, and I can see the difference, you know, in
well,
that.
Yeah, because I mean,
most
that's,
people can't.
Yeah, that's like a mechanic, you know, you can tell by the sound a car makes, yeah, okay, this is what's wrong, but now it's all computerized. Yep.
And what's nuts is, Smurf, is that, you know, I'm 52, I've lived several lives, and I know for a fact...
You got another life in you?
You're
freaking Doctor Who, for Christ's
sake.
Yeah,
not just that, but I know that when I talk to people about my life, they look at me and go, you're so full of shit. You are so full of shit. You didn't do all those things. And they're completely verifiable. At the time, I was an animator. I was the lead singer in a heavy metal band playing the Sunset Strip. So
that is fantastic.
And we were hugely popular. We were the number one drawing metal band. We were called Night Riot. My heroes would come see me. Ronnie James Dio and Rob Halford. And like, they'd be like, dude, Gene and Paul are here to see you. And we were like, oh, my God. So we were... So I tend to be in things right at the worst time. Because in 1992, we had 6 labels ready to sign us. And then grunge happened. And it was over, overnight. So...
I was kind of like this con scene.
Yeah. So I've done, you know, I was a rock guy for years. I was an animator for years, and then I decided to do comedy. And in the midst of all that, now I make comic books as well. So I consider myself a Renaissance man. Like, there's a lot of life to be had. Mm. So, you know, some people are like, concentrate on one thing and do that.
Right.
I want to have different aspects of my life. You know?
Well, and it's funny you say that, because I got asked today, actually, someone came up to the table, they're aware of what we do, and they're like, what do you do for fun? Because they view this as like a job. And I'm like, well, to be honest with you, this is my fun. This mm-hmm. is what
and you,
I
so
enjoy.
You've discovered the key to success, whether financially or not. The key is doing something you truly love,
mm-hmm.
and you—that's the reward.
Yes.
I mean, when I make a room full of people laugh, and I get off that stage, and I'm performing with other really talented comics,
right.
comics that I look up to, and I know that I just I can stay at that level with them. It feels great. It's victorious because the concept of stand-up comedy is bizarre.
I was just about to ask you, did you choose comedy or did comedy choose you?
Comedy somewhat chose me because I always, when I did rock and roll, and between songs, I was sort of Dave Grohl-ish. I would be kind of a cut-up. I would tell little anecdotes, and then people would...
Grohl is great on stage.
Yeah, he's like one of the best in between, you know, song guys. And so people would say, you should be a comedian. You should be a comedian. And to me, that was the scariest profession ever. Mm-hmm. I would drive right past the comedy store on my way to the whiskey and look at those guys and go, oh, dude, that's balls. That
right.
takes huge balls. So in 2003, when I fully kind of just gave up rock and roll, I'm like, this is just nonsense. A friend of mine said, you really need to be a stand-up comic, and I'm going to help you with that. He had me come down to the Marie Callender's he was doing a comedy show at. He goes, you're going to sit here for 4 weeks, and I just want you to watch these people.
All right.
Just watch them. The fifth week, I came just expecting to watch people. He goes, you're going up tonight. You got 4 minutes. And I'm like, yeah. I was like, oh my God. And I opened for Matt Eisman, who became now the Celebrity Apprentice winner.
Mm-hmm.
And it went great. And the guy took my buddy Mark, who discovered me, took all the credit. He goes, this is his first time ever. Can you believe that? Can you? And I discovered him. And he goes, okay, now you're coming back tomorrow. And every Saturday and Sunday for the next 6 weeks. Every Friday and Saturday for the next 6 weeks. And so that's how I got. So it sort of chose me, and then...
You embraced it.
I kind of wanted to do it just to see if I had the guts to do it.
Mm.
And then when I did, offers started, like people started going, hey, why don't you do this? I'd like to offer you this. So it took on a life of its own. Did I ever think I would try to pursue it as a career? No. But once, you know, it's such a great thing because you can get paid sometimes really good for doing a short amount of time. I mean, it's like hooker money.
You gotta always have your hooker money.
Right. And unfortunately, because I'm a single comic, that's where it goes. Why don't you guys just give me a hooker?
Hookers and booze. That's all I need.
You don't even need to give me money. Just have a hooker there afterwards and some pot. And
it's easy in Vegas.
Yeah, it's right.
So, who is the comic that you look up to? Because you're like, you say you've performed and opened for your idols. Who are those?
Oh, Cheech and Chong, most definitely, were the guys that spawned this. I would love to listen to Cheech and Chong albums when I was a kid. And the thing is, what people don't, you know, realize is they're not really stand-up guys. Those guys were sketches.
Sketch.
And of course, when it comes to stand-up, George Carlin to me was the pinnacle.
Butter.
The pinnacle. The,
so fucking
just
smooth.
The fact that he could, you know, in his delivery, the way he would deliver shit and still say something so deep and so, like, he would just rip a Band-Aid off and go, there's a wound right there, you pussy. And I love that about him. I also really like, as corny as he is, Jerry Seinfeld has always been, you know,
you
great.
You know, Seinfeld is so remarkably grounded for who he is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I love his show, the Comics and Cars
mm-hmm.
Getting Coffee. I mean, he served up the most warmest cup of wisdom to Zach Galifianakis.
Yes.
And he's all like, well, that's what you do. You're a personality. You're in public. You're supposed to talk to people.
Right.
Just basically you're fucking stupid. What are you doing? You know? Yeah. And just, Seinfeld just is so beyond everything else. And he is still funny. For a guy that doesn't cuss.
Yeah. And that's the magic of him, is to be able to you know, not have to rely upon expletives.
Yeah.
And the thing is he's an observationalist, you know, and I really dig that. My comedy would be considered like pop culture. I like to talk about pop culture a lot, but there's really just like, I love stand-up comedy, and George Lopez is actually the guy that told me to be the 420 comic.
Nice.
And I met George.
Is he okay?
He is nowadays.
Yeah.
Looks a little weird.
Doesn't he? Because I watched his recent.
Looks a little grungy.
His recent stand-up, and he's got these weird tics now.
Yeah,
he's
got. Hey, George. Hey, man. You know, George has got these weird tics, dude. You know? I mean, hey. You know what I mean? He looks around, and his eyes, man. His eyes go. He's like nuts.
Yeah, he's got that weird.
Yeah.
Thing with his mouth.
He does. And recently, I love George. Is such a great guy. He invited me to his pool party last year, which was astounding. You know, first person I met is Lawrence Fishburne walking out. I'm like, oh my God, it's that kind of party?
God.
Yeah. And George, I met him in 1993. I was a singer in a heavy metal band, and I used to see George at the supermarket. Now, George wasn't famous yet. He was L.A. famous.
Right.
He was like headliner of the Laugh Factory and stuff. You know, a local celebrity. And he'd always be in like a kind of a suit, and I'd see him at the supermarket, and he'd always go, hey, Jeff.
Hey, man, I saw you over there. I walked in the supermarket and I smelled a skunk. And I was like, did they let a skunk here? And then I saw you. I was like, oh, it's Jeff.
He would always fuck with me. And I was just like a guy. And then he'd see me and go, hey, you know, I was watching how you shot, man. You can buy things other than cereal or donuts. I'm just saying.
There's a section over here called produce. I don't know if you know about it.
So 10 years later, 2003, I'm at the Ice House, and I told George is there, and I went to see him specifically, and I told him I do stand-up comedy, and I'm trying to do stand-up, and he goes,
all right, man, that's cool. What's your voice?
And I said, I haven't really found it yet. He goes, man, it's already there. You're a stoner.
Hey, man, you have to use that. He goes, look, if you stick to that and you be a stoner comic, he goes, when Cheech and Chong need to hand the mantle to somebody, you're going to be the guy. And lo and behold, I got the moniker of the 420 comic and ran with it. 2014, the Fillmore here in Denver, I opened for Cheech and Chong and immediately thought of George and went. And then
thank you.
Yeah. And then the crazy thing is, 2 years ago, I hadn't seen George in 14 years. Just wow. Let him go on. I never bugged him, never tried to beg him to get on his shows or anything. Just worked at my craft. And then George brought me to the Mirage backstage. And he was like a doting father to people. He was like, hey, aww, this is Jeffrey, man. This is the guy that I've made the pot comic.
That's got to make you feel kind of good, though.
I mean,
that's,
I got chills right now.
That's affirmation for
so great.
What you've done.
So great. And I said, dude, own it. I want you to own this. I want you to know that you put something, because now he's like an open pothead. He doesn't mind about
that. No, he doesn't mind it at all.
And it was so great. Like last year, I went. He was inducting Cypress Hill into the Walk of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And George is such a genuine person. He really is. Like, he'll answer my Instagram messages. He's so genuine. There's 1,000 people there to see Cypress Hill. Chuck D is over here from Public Enemy what's his name? Everlast is over here. Like, all these famous people are all around me and stuff. And George gets a glimpse of me, and there's like this VIP area, and he goes, hey, Jeff, come here. And he tells security, no, let him in. And then I get into this little security thing, and he shakes my hand and pulls me in close and goes, man, I'm so glad you're here, bro. I'm glad you were here.
Aww.
This means a lot to me. And I was like, so he's still grounded.
He's still grounded.
And that's almost hard to believe. It's almost hard to believe. But he is, I give him a lot of credit. And George has been very supportive of me. He did promise me one thing, and I'm going to keep him to this. When this COVID thing happened, I said, now that I'm reassessing my life, there's one goal I have. Open for George Lopez. And I said, so when this is over and we get back to somewhat normal,
Do you think that's possible? He goes, done. Done.
Wow. So that's huge,
that's
though.
That's huge, yeah.
That's like, I would be opening for like Carlin or
yeah,
shit, anybody. I mean, a flood of comics come to mind. Because every time I was in Vegas, I had to stop and see Carlin.
Yeah.
Because every show
I never got to see Carlin. Oh, my God.
And I saw him four times, every time. New material in that Carlin-esque.
That's what's so great about him. He could always come up with new shit because he wasn't. It wasn't an act.
No, it wasn't a routine.
It wasn't a routine. This is a guy that's got something to say, you know? And I don't know if people have ever seen it, but I'm a huge sitcom fanatic. And his show, Carlin, you can watch on YouTube. Hilarious. His comedic timing is impeccable. I mean,
I think he was just too good. Him and Dangerfield were just yeah. so on the ball, just so on point. And right. I just don't think people understood them. That got him all the time.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my late great mentor, the guy that really gave me. He was my Mr. Miyagi in all this. His name was Vic Dunlop. Vic Dunlop was on The Gong Show. He was on Make Me Laugh.
Yes.
And he was a cast member of the Richard Pryor Show.
That's right.
And Vic was the most talented comedian I've ever seen. He cast Brad Williams in a movie. He cast, you know, he and the Unknown Comic made a movie together. And
I still can't believe the Unknown Comic made a movie.
Yeah. And the neat thing was I brought the Unknown Comic out of retirement here in Denver in 2015. At the Oriental Theater. He hadn't done comedy in 5 years, and my buddy Chris Chiari from King of Quality and I put this show together. The Unknown Comic, Steve McGrew, Jody Champion, and myself. And, you know, we got Steve McGrew, Denver's number one comic, to open for the Unknown Comic. Steve McGrew watched that set like he was going to school. It was amazing. And but for us to be part of something, for me to perform with the Unknown Comic was like, didn't mean much to everybody else, but it meant a
whole lot
to me.
That's a bucket list, yeah. Absolutely.
And to know that he's supportive of the fact that he's influenced me. He'll always give me compliments and stuff. And it's hard to know how you're doing. You know what I mean? Other than, you know, the haters and the people that look.
Yeah, got, unless you get like hate mail, you know, you don't know your touching.
And I mean, I get death threats. It's pretty nuts. But you realize you're affecting people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you.
You get their response.
You get their response. And the best response I can get from an audience is that they want to get me high after the show. Or give me pot.
Which is fine. I mean, Fluffy gets, you know, food.
Yep.
What's his face gets tater salad.
Yes,
and
right.
I mean, Ron White. Wait, everyone always says I look like Ron White, especially when I'm drinking.
I could see that in the eyes.
Yeah.
And I've been this close to Ron White.
One I would love to meet. In
oh, the great. Here's a great Ron White story. I was at the Comedy Store in the back, which is now not available to us. It was called Sacred Ground.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be where comedians could go smoke pot or do drugs, and nobody said it. And Mitzi would just be like, I didn't see that.
Yeah, on the low.
So I'm back there, and Ron White is standing next to me. And he just, I mean, he's like maybe 2 feet from me. He just turns and looks me right in the eye and goes, do you have a joint? And I go, yes, I do. And he goes, I thought you did. And I go, do you want
God, it? You look just like him and Liz sound like him doing that. Oh, my God.
I pulled it out and I fucking smoked it with it. But it's so funny because when I do impressions, I did my buddy John DiResta's podcast, and I started going into Gary Busey. I was talking about Gary, you know, in a weird, very weird conversation about supernatural animals. I'm talking about chickens here, roosters that have look. These are radioactive roosters. You know, like I started going off on shit, and he goes, "Dude, you just zoned out there for a minute."
Yeah.
Like I thought you were. He goes, "I thought you were friggin' channeling Gary Busey." And the funniest thing, we tried to play a prank on Gary Busey that backfired. My buddy Frazier Smith from KLOS in L.A., legendary comedian and radio host. For years, I produced some of Frazier's stuff, and for years I was a voice on his radio show but people didn't know it was me. Even even other comedians, they'd go, that's the 420 comic? I didn't know that guy could do that shit. So I would call, hey, Frase, it's me, Gary. Just wanted to say, hey, look, we're going to be down at the park, but you got to wear a helmet. It's required. You know, I'd just go into stuff. And so did that for years, okay? And then I decided, hey, let's use the mandala effect on Gary. I contacted Gary, and I said, hey, this is Jeffrey Peterson, associate producer for the Frasier Smith Show. We would love it if you could come on again this week like you do every week. And he said, if you can send a car to pick me up, I will be there. We sent a car, picked him up, and we thought, okay, he thinks he's been on the radio this whole time. And he said in the middle of the interview, he goes, Frasier, I just want to say, Jeffrey Peterson is the foremost Gary Busey impressionist. And we did not, his brain did.
Wow.
So for him to say that, I was like, oh,
that
man.
Is a score.
It was like a compliment, and he told us, I'm not that stupid, yeah. guys.
But see, you don't know with him, because he's just, because I remember watching him on Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah.
And he was just so.
He's in on the joke.
He is.
He knows that. The little bit of brain damage he has given an opportunity to, you know, he uses a vocabulary that's like beyond his, yeah. you know, limitations.
He's,
and
he's just, and he is on the joke. He really is.
Mm-hmm. And that was proof that I could, like, Frasier was like, oh my God, dude, he knows. He knows that's you. You know,
so, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yay, but oh shit.
And since you know comics, what's funny is I used to have so much fun with Frasier. I produced his podcast at the John Lovitz Comedy Club,
mm-hmm.
and I booked a lot of guests for him. Like he'd be shocked at the guests I could get him. Like Raj from What's Happening, Ernest Thomas. I just living in LA, I've come to know people. I knew
Dude,
him.
Rerun was the best. Yeah. LA, he would get
right.
Yeah.
And I brought John Sally once, and like I'm not even a sports guy, but John Sally's a stoner.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing was I had Greg Wilson. Greg Wilson, do you know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
The comedian, and Jeff Richards from SNL. And Greg is, you know, very high strung, very right. He's a very high energy. Jeff Richards is
the polar
very
opposite.
Funny, but very segmented.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta like, you know,
you gotta bait him out. Mm-hmm.
You gotta bring him out. And once he does, he'll do these crazy impressions that you could never hear anybody else do. So we go to a commercial. Jeff Richards walks out and goes, fuck this, I'm leaving, man. This is bullshit. And I go, what's the matter? And he goes, because I can't get a word in edgewise. Wilson's in there just like dominating the whole show, dude. And I go, well, I said, get your jabs in there, bro. And he goes, nah. He goes, no, I don't want to fight for time. He goes, I'm leaving. And he just got up and left. I call in and I go, hey, it's me, Greg Wilson. And Greg Wilson's like, no, I'm not. I'm right here. I go, no, you're not. I am. I go, dude, you just made Richards leave, man. Because you talk too much. And he was like, so I fucked with him on the air with him. And he's like, really? I thought.
Wow.
It was great. Greg's
That's
awesome.
Hilarious. So I could talk about comics with you all day.
Mm-hmm.
You did mention a comic book,
mm-hmm.
which I think is impressive. Because there's a lot of work that goes into making a comic book.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a comic book artist as well as a cartoonist, but I didn't, everything was in New York, and I was like, that scared me
as
a kid.
Yeah, it's a big town.
So, I would make comic books ever since I was a little kid, you know, just
right.
for myself and my family.
It's a thing, yeah.
And then in 2000, I used to follow this band called the Stratosphere, and they were like a crazy, you know, jam band, kind of in the Mr. Bungle like category. I met them at Burning Man. They were that kind of band. And so they had a weird following. Their fans would dress up as Sith lords or you know, they had these heavy metal cheerleaders that were vampires. And their music wasn't dark, but all their fans had like a kind of a gothic look to them.
CeeLo Green's follow-up singers?
So I created this character called Sheep Man. That is a superhero sheep with a pink cape. I'm dressed in all white and fluffy. I was the complete antithesis to the goth thing. And they were like, what the hell is this? And it became a thing where, like, I would go to these shows and they go, oh my God, it's him, it's Sheep Man. And so Sheep Man got so popular, I created a comic series for their website. And after 10 issues, it got really popular with this niche audience. Right. And so I was like, in 2013, I was like, I got to really devote some time and energy to this. So since 2013, I've put out 11 issues and rolling papers, coloring books, all kinds of, merch and stuff like that. But I really love making comic books. I mean, just... I illustrate them, I write them, and my brother Dagwood is my colorist, and we
you sit around and draw.
I sit around and draw, and it's become especially during this time,
right,
the COVID crap. I just instantly, when this happened, I just put comedy aside. It's not going to happen. Put my gears directly into making comic books. This has been the most productive year I've had. I mean, we have 2 issues out this year. Our 3rd one's going into the printer next week, and I'm going to be printing a 4th one in December.
Jesus.
So I'm finally at like a quarterly, publication distribution. So it feels good that
I was going to say, how do you feel? I mean, you like puffed up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you can see visibly how confident you are about this.
The crazy thing is that's my real comfort zone is comic book nerddom, hanging out at places like this and talking to guys like James from All Seas. It's a kind of weird, like subculture of you could be like a heavy metal guy and like comic books. You could be like a hip hop artist, you could be from all walks of life, and the one thing that ties you together is you're fascinated by these panels,
I'm a jock, and everyone is surprised by that because of they know me from the comic books.
Right,
and it's,
like I said to James, how crazy it is that like this event has comic books and sports memorabilia. Because what's weird is when I was in grade school and high school, the jocks would beat me up for being a nerd.
Exactly. It is exactly it. Yeah. And I was on the football team. I played hockey, and everyone was like, "You read comic? You one of those?" I'm exactly. "No, because you're like, you don't want to carry the stain."
Yeah.
Now, when you were growing up, what did you read? What were you? What was your? Who was your hero?
I was really into Thor a lot, because I'm a Viking, I'm Scandinavian, so I really dug that. Conan the Barbarian was one of my favorites.
Oh my God, the Conan run.
I really liked those. But what I really got hooked on was What If. I love What If. It's like a Twilight Zone of the Marvel Universe.
And most of those have actually become stories now from back in the day.
Yeah. And I liked the kind of the off groups like the Champions or Alpha Flight, but there's so much I love about comics and the DC world too. There's a wide variety of stuff I like from Marvel and DC. But now, as a comic book consumer, I specifically look for the title you never heard from the comic book company that's a stalwart one. I love those off, like, heroes that are just, just ones that fell through the cracks.
Right.
That's what I kind of see.
The B-League?
Mm-hmm, the B-League. The underdogs. I really like to read about them and be the guy that bought their comic, I still get the same excitement looking through a bin that I did when I was a kid, And I used to, as a kid, my Saturday mornings in L.A. would be very specific. I would go to the newsstand, and I would be there, and the guy got used to me and my friend being there for about 3 hours every Saturday, just deciding on which 4 comics were bought. Like, I could get, I don't know if I want.
Hey, you had a budget in 60 cents?
Yeah.
50 cents? That was a lot for a comic, because you still got to play a video game, and you still got to pick up something to eat, and you got to read.
And finally the guy realized, we're not loitering. We're just so meticulous about this that I can't just buy this randomly. I have to really think about it before I buy this. So, I love reading comics, because it's such a escape. I mean, and I'm very proud to be part of a legacy of comic books, because
sequential art is the oldest form of art. I mean, it's cave drawings, basically. Yeah. And we're carrying on this ancient tradition of telling stories in sequence with drawings that go with it. It's just so neat.
Who's your favorite artist?
I love Neil Adams.
Have you been reading his new Fantastic Four title, Antithesis?
I have not.
Oh,
it
my God. I have not enjoyed a picture of the Surfer as much since, like, Ron Lim first started doing the Surfer. I never thought I would see Neil Adams doing the Surfer. It's a great, great series.
Yeah. Steve Ditko, I think, is underrated. I love Steve Ditko.
Yeah.
Especially when he did, like, Machine Man and stuff like that, when he was a little... And I know I always pronounce his name wrong, but John Buscema, or Buscemi, whatever.
Oh, yes.
When he used to do the X-Men, I used to love those. John Byrne, too.
Byrne's run on the X-Men.
Yeah, there's so many great...
X-Men 108 was... I mean, what Byrne delivered in that issue is just, even to this day, just gives me chills.
Yeah, I literally get excited meeting these artists. Like, you know, it's so... That's where the nerddom still is for me. You know, at the Colorado Springs Comic Con, Neil Adams, I got roped into helping Neil Adams pack. And, you know, he's kind of a curmudgeon guy.
He's very, yeah, but you don't, good Neil or bad Neil, who'd you get today?
He was, after I helped him and stuff, just turned to me, handed me an X-Men soft cover that he did, and just said, there you go, that's for you for helping me out. And I didn't go, hey, can you sign it?
Yeah.
I don't have to. Neil Adams gave me that.
Yeah.
Like, that's beyond getting an autograph.
Yeah.
And so, and then when I do these events, like in Vegas and stuff, we have little tiny Comic-Cons and stuff. Like, I met Sam De La Rosa last year and some of these other guys. And they're just, these guys are unappreciated. You know, Jerry Conway and Rob Liefeld. I met a lot of these guys. And you meet them, and they're all different. They all have different takes on these things.
Yeah.
So, and it's neat that they all work within the same framework. They have to, you know. So
it's funny because you feel like it's so big, but in reality, it's such a small little niche world. That
Jim Lee, another great one.
Oh my God,
love Jim. Very nice guy too.
He is.
And we're fortunate in Vegas. We have a lot of comic book stores. There's probably like 20 comic book stores.
Jesus.
And one of my favorites is Torpedo Comics. John Dolmanian.
Yep, I've been to Torpedo multiple times.
Great dude.
Yep.
And there's a perfect example of what we're talking about. This guy's the drummer from System of a Down. He's such a nerd. He owns a comic book store.
Mm-hmm.
And John is great. He's been a big benefit to Vegas, and we love him there. And he's my go-to guy in Vegas. Like, if I'm like, oh, I got to find out about the value of this comic,
right, or just hit him up.
I'll hit up John Dolmanian. And
that's a hell of a. I mean, that's,
yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
And that goes back to my heavy metal roots. And oddly enough, this sounds crazy, but my band Night Riot, we were from 88 to 92. We played in the Burbank, Glendale area a lot in Hollywood. Darren and Chavo both told us, dude, we were influenced by you. We used to go watch Night Riot all the time.
Nice.
So it's like full circle thing. And again, it's like I've lived a cool life, and I'm very proud. Like, with all the stuff that's happened in the world, like, I've come to the realization I don't need fame. I don't need wealth that I don't know what to do with. I've lived a really great life, and I'm still, you know, still got
it's
a
still
lot of
in
things
progress.
To do. My next chapter is going to be the comic books and the side of me that I've never released to people. I'm a sci-fi writer. Ray Bradbury was my hero. I got to meet Ray a couple times, and he told me personally to continue to write. And I've been
Fahrenheit 451 is I mean, it's probably his best his best work, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, you get all the other sci-fi and all that stuff, but Fahrenheit 451 is just so well put together.
For me, The Illustrated Man is probably
my
favorite
God,
book.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, a bunch of short stories. But
yeah.
But so 25 years ago, I wrote about 38 short stories. Because for one thing, I had met Ray, and when I met Ray, he goes, I said, I write sci-fi too, and I'm very much inspired by it. He goes, how many stories have you written? And I said, 30. He goes,
write 30 more, and you, my friend, will be a writer. And so,
well, alrighty then.
So 6 years later, I come walking up at a book signing, and he goes, "Well, it's my friend, the writer." And I was like, I mean, some people have photographic memory. Gene Simmons, yep. Ronnie James Dio, there's a few people. But so my next chapter is I wrote these short stories, never published them. And what I've decided to do is I'm going to make audiobooks.
That's a great idea.
I'm going to make
You've got the voice for it.
Thank you. I'm also going to recruit some semi-famous people to do the voices too.
I volunteer.
Great. But what's neat about my short stories is I wrote these when I was 27. And the insight that I had to this future... Mm. is astounding. I mean, there's things I've wrote about viruses, right. Shutting the world down. I wrote about the heavy surveillance, very Philip K. Dick stuff. Mm. But, you know, some of it is off on my own tangent away from those guys, but it's stuff that's happening right now. And it's so I feel compelled, like, okay, now is the time.
You're a lot more dialed in than you thought.
Yeah.
Well, you've had hit after hit, so I mean, there's no doubting your timing. That's for damn sure.
People have asked too, like, well, how come you're not rich then? It's like, but you know what?
But
I'm rich in here.
Rich is perspective. Yeah. Rich is, I mean, that's so subjective.
It is. It is, and it's that's the whole thing is, for anybody that is pursuing something you love. That's the reward.
Mm-hmm.
That is the reward.
True story.
Is doing it and being in flux. And, like, and you know what's something very important? No matter what you do, whether you're a truck driver, whether you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, whatever, when I'm on stage performing, I take a second while I'm looking out at the audience and I focus on the microphone and I really look at it and then I look down at my feet. And I realize I'm doing what I love. It's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the middle.
You're in the moment.
I'm in the moment. It's like I'm walking on the tightrope. And so people need to catch themselves more.
That's exciting.
And go, like, right now, you're in flux.
Yeah.
This is what
constant.
You do.
this is my everyday.
And you're very good at it.
Thank you.
You've got great conversational style.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Aww. Okay, so we've been at this an hour. I should probably let you get back to work, or at least
you know, since
shut
it's 4:19, because that means
you
that
got
means
you
I've
got 1 minute
outside.
Till your break, and I don't want to interrupt break time. How do the people at home and in the world around stalk you properly?
I'm on those social networks. I just got out of Facebook jail, so we should have a party.
See, no Chris Evansing on Facebook. That's a no-no. I'm sorry, that's a bad joke. Bad joke. I retract that.
That's funny. But you can find me on Facebook, Instagram. I bounce around on those and stuff like that. But I have my own YouTube channel if you want to see any of my comedy and stuff. But something in the future that I can't wait to bring out to everybody is one of my comic books, The Achievers. We're working on an animated series for that right now.
Very cool.
And so that hopefully is going to tie everything I do all together. And you know.
How can they get the comic if they are so inclined, since you're on point?
In this wonderful town, if you're in Denver, stop by All Seas over in Aurora. If you're more in the downtown area, Mutiny Comics, Mutiny Information Cafe
mm-hmm.
has my stuff, as well as Angelo's in two locations. I'm all over Colorado, I should say. Muse in Colorado Springs, Time Warp.
What about nationwide? Because believe it or not, we have listeners in New Zealand,
yes.
New England. We have we have this cell in New York that
yeah.
constantly sends me messages.
My stuff is available nationwide in head shops and comic book stores. I just put some in Seaside Heights, New Jersey at Beach and Chong's is the name of the
very
location.
Nice. Very nice.
So I'm in a unique position. I won on a show called The Marijuana Show in 2014 out here, a reality show. It was the Shark Tank for Stoners.
Mm-hmm.
I won with my comic books. And I said that I'm going to put comic books in head shops, and I'm going to put paraphernalia in comic book stores. And I've done that. And that's really...
That's an achievement point, I think.
Yeah.
At least maybe 15. I don't know.
Yeah. So you can, ask your local head shop or comic book store if they have my comics. If they don't,
get
them. You want them.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it's break time for you, Mr. Peterson. Thank
right.
you so much.
Thank you.
In the meantime, laugh hard, run fast, and always be kind.